Is it on?
Yeah, it's on. All right. My name is Jimmy Sin Suicide. I have something you're going to want to hear. This is Double Feature. It's a podcast pairing two movies back to back to consider their themes and making insight. The tape you're about to listen to may contain spoilers. To get some background, you can start an earlier episode, Citizen Kane and The Godfather. It's just a few shows down the feed. This tape was reclaimed with some work from a bunker just north. Well, I guess I say where, but we just don't know a lot right now. As the events of November 8th began looking disastrous, Eric and Michael went underground. There's still a lot of confusion around if they're staying there, or if they're safe, or what's going to happen. I need to go. We'll get more information, I promise. Just start with this.
Well, boys, looks like you started the fun without me.
You're all sick. Every last one of you.
We're going to need a bigger gun.
What's the matter? You scared of things that go boom?
Give me one goddamn reason why I shouldn't blow your goddamn brains all over that goddamn wall.
My name is Eric 13. I am here with Michael Kester on this double feature.
Yeah, we're doing two features today.
But we have three movies I want to talk about today, but only two extensively.
Okay.
And one mandated by Patrick Klein, mm-hmm. which may not be what you think. And you probably have no thoughts about it. So I don't know.
Oh, that we're doing
you
this
know,
one already.
You know,
pumped.
Yeah.
Excited.
You know what's happening.
Excited.
So stay tuned for that. There will be no spoilers. The movies we're doing today.
Right. We're going to do, we're doing a movie called White God, which is, what is it? Danish?
Sure. Let's go with Danish.
Norwegian.
Uh-huh.
Finnish. It's a Norwegian movie.
Country of origin, least important today.
It's a Scandinavian film. And then we're pairing that with The Tribe, which is, that's a Ukrainian film. I got that one on lock.
Is that the,
Plemia is the Ukrainian title.
Okay. That's a Ukrainian title, not an original title.
Right. One of the films has subtitles, though the main characters in neither film can talk. So that's our theme today is right. Silent leads.
Sure. Well, it is nonverbal communication, and it is it's one of those themes that, man, as I watched this, I had so many ideas that I had to constantly keep asking myself, yeah, but everyone is thinking this, right?
Right. I mean, eventually, I feel like the ideas that we're going to discuss today hit you over the head like a dresser.
Yeah, that's
possible.
It's
not something, the films, they're subtle movies, but I don't think that what they're saying dwells deeply in subtlety.
Well, so this will be the experiment then. If we have some subtle movies with obvious, let's say, talking points, I guess, obvious
mm-hmm. sure.
topics of conversation to come away with, I'm curious if our conversation reaches the same ends that other people's inevitably will. I don't think it's possible to watch these and not at least tell someone about them.
Right.
Because they're
definitely
fucking
not.
Crazy.
I know.
Not crazy as Fiddler on the Roof, but let me tell you. So we have this Kickstarter thing, I guess
yeah.
still have,
yeah.
because
yeah,
you and
sure.
I still have no,
sure.
no backup plan. But
right.
people, you know, they pick movies, we put them on the show, we pair them up with another movie, and we spoil the movie, and you could skip 24 minutes into the show when today, for instance, we're talking about The Tribe. But we also have this thing where you could sponsor an episode. You get the episode made. And that was one of the Kickstarter incentives. And Patrick, who, by the way, I mean, funds like a tenth of our show every mm-hmm. year. We would yeah. die without Patrick, and I'm so happy that he's there for us. I don't hear from Patrick all year. I don't know if you talk to Patrick.
I don't hear.
I hear from. I basically hear from him once a year, where he goes, "Oh, your show's in jeopardy again, huh? Here, but you have to do this." And he gave us a stipulation, and he just wanted us to say "Fiddler on the Roof."
Yeah.
We don't have to cover it. We don't have to talk about it. Here, if you can read his exact copy here.
Fiddler on the Roof - go rewatch that shitter.
yeah. I don't know if that's a typo or
I think
it's the R key next to the period. I don't know.
Yeah. So either way, everybody, I just wanted to remind you that Fiddler on the Roof existed, exists, and will continue to exist, and on to White God.
So something interesting happened to me when I watched White God. I want to come out to you about this immediately.
You got a puppy.
So we have, no, I don't know, maybe get a kitten. We like to talk about how desensitized we become to these things. Oh, and every once in a while, something will,
you're going there right away. Good.
Challenge us. I think our go-to is usually Martyrs, which is funny to me because it's the better part of a decade ago now that we saw that. And after Martyrs, almost nothing bothered me as much. But something new that in almost 10 years of doing our show has never happened to me before. This movie has a scene when it opens, and I want to talk about, expand on the violence and stuff a lot, but just to start on this strange physical reaction I had, it opens with a pretty brutal scene of an animal being slaughtered for food.
Yep.
It's something that happens all the time.
Regularly.
Majority of the people in this country and probably on the planet eats that animal. Uh-huh. And we're just seeing, its skin pulled off and it cut into pieces and it's bubbly, intestines falling out. Mm-hmm. And I threw up. I threw up during the movie. So
there you go.
Congratulations. I don't
Good
know if
job,
you
White
have you ever
God.
Thrown up during during a double feature.
No,
movie?
No.
Yeah.
No.
I don't know that I've ever thrown up during a movie before.
My stomach isn't connected to my mind in that way.
I didn't think mine was either. I've never gotten there.
Yeah.
I have gotten to the moment of like, stop peeling that skin. Come on.
It sounds like a beautiful thing. Like to me to me throwing up because a movie has disgusted me feels the same as like ejaculating without touching my own dick. That's the same level of transcendence. It's like, oh my God, I've gotten to this point.
I don't know that I've stated it yet this year. I try and bring it up once a year at least, but my favorite concept of film is movies as Ebert's idea of a machine for empathy. So you have a movie, it is a device. It's a device you create that gives people a feeling that they wouldn't otherwise have. Almost like a box you open and then you're sad. Mm-hmm. A box you open and then you feel hopeful. A box you open and then you vomit. We found that one. I have that box now. I know where that is. I didn't have, we're still unlocking new ones.
Put that on your shelf. Put that on the shelf next to your other boxes.
Right.
From the other
years. This is a nonverbal movie. And the big thing that I said, I thought that was the obvious conversation is that we don't necessarily need verbiage to go through movies and we can still follow a story and so on and so forth. But I'm wondering if just in discussing these movies, if we have the same kind of conversation we would normally have, or what, when you come away from this movie, especially knowing that we're going to pair it with The Tribe, a movie about a totally different thing with a similar, coincidentally similar kind of strategy. What is White God?
To me, White God is, it's a revenge. It's basically, it's an interspecies rape revenge movie. Can we put it that
way?
Sure. It's a film. There was another movie that I wanted to put on the show this year that you put the kibosh on called Cockfighter.
It's so funny too.
That's a movie, obviously about cockfighting, and you had reservations about whether or not it was okay to accept or we like to celebrate movies. So I guess by the transitive property, we would be in some fashion celebrating cockfighting, right?
Firstly, let's be honest. I'm pretty sure your theme was going for a dick joke. So
it
that was my
been.
Initial
yeah, I
reservation.
I think I wanted to put it with one with the Beaver documentary.
But secondly, I did have, not as an animal rights thing, I'm totally not an animal rights person, or even a pet owner, or a person who cares about violence depicted, fake violence depicted towards animals in movies any more than humans. Having said all that, cockfighting is just a weird sort of tasteless thing. And I don't really know, you know what I mean?
So as somebody who...
Dogfighting will allow us to explore that anyway, so it doesn't really matter.
As somebody who doesn't necessarily strongly empathize with the animal kingdom as much as the human kingdom. And I'm in the same boat. I'm not trying to stigmatize you in any way. But do you find that in scenarios where, say, the dog is kicked out of the car or the smaller dog is shot, does that feel more, less, or the same as when that type of rejection or that type of violence happens to humans? And I have an answer, and the answer is the obvious one, that I'm much, much more affected when people shoot dogs than people.
Oh, interesting. Why do you think that is, before I answer that?
I think it comes from a non-biblical version of the notion of original sin, right?
No, I don't know what you're talking about.
it boils down to the fact that when a dog is shot, when a dog is left out on the street, there is no way to communicate the why. And suddenly the whole situation is different and the animal doesn't, there is no way to translate that situation to something mm-hmm. akin to understanding. And even in a movie, you know, like Wolf Creek or, you know, something where you have this alpha creature picking off individuals, they can at least, while the situation seems insane to them, they can fathom, they have a better grasp, you know, the intelligence and the self-awareness of human beings. They can come to terms with things in a way that I feel like animals can't. And
sure,
animals are much more quickly and entirely succumb to fear and just completely encapsulated in fear. And I feel like even depicted in film, when you have like in this movie, when mm-hmm. people are being attacked by dogs, I feel like there's an amount of fear lost by logic, knowledge, and reason.
There's kind of a cognition question there.
Right.
Or a cognition problem, maybe. How aware are they of what's happening? Right. And your argument would be to say that they don't understand the reason it's happening, to what may be happening. There is,
right.
Yeah.
Simply the fact that the human being can acknowledge that maybe they are about to die gives them a certain level of understanding of a situation. And maybe to you that means that it's more frightening.
I was just going to say, could you see an argument for
definitely,
the opposite?
Definitely.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there is a question there about that. And also, I think, you know, I would never celebrate anything that could feeling pain. I think that's where my moral line mm-hmm. is. I'm more invested in humans, but I don't think it's moral or ethical to inflict pain upon a thing that sure. you don't have to, that can, that has the ability to feel pain. Having said that, I'm glad that we kind of explained a little bit of background before we go into. So here's an interesting thing for me, right, is that I empathize more with human beings, and greatly so in films. But knowing that, I watch White God and I empathize more with the animals. And I think that is, I spent a lot of time thinking about that actually. So I'm glad we're talking about mm-hmm. it here. We have dogs as actors here.
Right.
The film goes out of its way to kind of
strong actors, which is insane.
Well, and strong editors. Mm-hmm. I don't want
right. to. Sure,
I hate when people undersing the editors in this, because there's, oh boys, there are a lot of that. A strong crew on the day as uh-huh. well, and wranglers and so forth. But we are willing to relate to inanimate things and non-human things. Think about a Pixar movie, right? Or a cartoon. There are cartoons even we've covered on the show that, and you know, Pixar is a great example too, that are more emotional mm-hmm. than
you're talking specifically and literally of Inside Out, right? Because the characters are literal emotions.
Yes. Thank you. But there are moments in Inside Out that really get to me. There's moments in all Pixar movies that get to me.
Yeah. No, there's definitely that hot feeling that happens behind my eyes.
Sure.
That may
sure.
as well just be called the Pixar feeling for me.
There's an interesting question about that, why that is, and why those movies provoke that reaction. Are they just so good at it? Or is there perhaps something about crossing so far away from the resemblance of a human? We follow these dogs and we have to really engage and follow them the same way we're going to talk about the tribe, I think, where because you're not getting people talking at you, which is ultimately what a movie is. Mm-hmm. They're not having a conversation with you so much. You know, they're trying, but it's a one-sided dialogue. And when you don't have that dialogue, you have to engage. You have to go, so what are these dogs doing? Where are they going? Where's that guy going? Is he talking to this other dog? And you play out this mental thing in your head where you're sort of trying to get in their minds and figure out, okay, so what is the internal monologue since I'm not getting one? Mm-hmm. And for me, it keeps me glued to it. It's more, both of these films, I think, engaged me more than anything we watched this year because I felt like I had to be there solving it with the movies. I had to be there mm-hmm. making sure we're moving from point to point and I know exactly where the motivation's locked in and what we're doing. And in doing that, you really get inside a character's kind of head, their frame of mind, and you start to celebrate their victories and feel their pain. There is a concept that people talk about, especially in animation, called the Uncanny Valley, mm-hmm. which we've probably covered at some point.
Yeah.
An idea that when things that are not human or animated get so close to being human, but are not... are still decipherable from human.
Right.
You know, like a really advanced CG thing that's supposed to be human, but you still kind of, for some reason, it feels a little off. It makes you uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. You're looking into its eyes and it's dead. You know, it's right. not a real right. human. It throws people off. I actually think, and I'm speaking to our artsy fuck audience here, but I think human beings themselves are a little bit of the uncanny valley in film.
Yeah.
We are told that the process of pointing a camera at some people who are play acting is telling us a real story.
Right.
So we have to really, if we see humans and they're not our same size, height, age, skin color, background, if we can't identify
FPS,
with them,
right.
then we're saying, well, this is a story about this guy. Mm-hmm. You're not necessarily going, oh, this is my story. And when something's a cartoon, inanimate, or an animal, you don't have that reservation about, you know, you're not supposed to go, well, when I was a puppy, this happened to me.
Right.
So you just right. jump inside. Is that a thing? Maybe that makes it easier.
Do you then from, you know, on the same train of thought, to me, it feels like when you get to the conclusion point of the film where the dogs, the uprising, right? Mm-hmm. The dog uprising, which is the thing
apocalyptic
the movie promises from
moment.
The beginning. Yeah.
yeah. Just amazing, by the way. Everybody wants to have a zombie moment in their film. That's why we see so many. Mm-hmm. And with just a little bit of creative thought, you can have, I mean, it's 28 days later, you know, and it's just, mm-hmm. it's one of several things in this film, I think, I've never really seen before.
It feels a little bit less morally reprehensible when the dogs start
tearing people apart.
Well, yeah, I mean, the revenge feels, it again, to
then
go back to
if
the-
if it were a nun with a revolver or something like that.
Right. To go back to the rape revenge thing, it feels very similar to that, but maybe even more so because there is no morality in the animals themselves. They don't know any better.
Yeah.
They have decided that people are now the greater enemy. And I mean, even in I Spit on Your Grave or Ms. 45, we're sitting there going, yeah, but you don't kill people. We had sure. that conversation.
sure.
You know?
Sure.
We go, no, total. I understand. He broke into your apartment twice. I don't know how that happened, but you still don't kill people. That's.
But you know, these dogs have never sat in an ethics class.
Right.
They can't really be held accountable.
Again, to go back to what you were saying about maybe selectively identifying with the dogs,
mm-hmm.
you're sitting there going, well, if that were me, I would kill people too because you
yeah,
don't
right.
know better. You can't know better.
You're watching a space invasion movie.
Yeah,
at
it becomes
that point.
It becomes a dangerous thought experiment. Kind of, it begs the same idea as when people go, "Well, I don't kill people because God says I shouldn't." It's like, well, sure. What if you found out? What if you found out there was no God? Would you just rampantly start slaughtering?
Those are the terrifying ones, by the way. If anybody ever tells you they don't do something because God would frown on them, you might want to take a couple steps away from those people. If they say white God, though, well, I think in today's society, that probably means something different.
Right.
Not to dogs. So this gets to one of the other things that I think is... it's a truly unique thing about this movie, and that is the blend that it has of these moments of rampage and of celebrated sort of almost tropes of feel-goodery.
Yeah, yeah.
You have your sort of, I described this movie to someone
today. You
have
puppy hijinks that are like kind of speckled around the movie.
They were asking what I was watching, and I told them it's kind of like a cross between Schindler's List and Homeward Bound.
Perfect,
like
yes.
right? But the movie would fall in complete Homeward Bound territory.
Oh, yeah.
Would be a cheesy animal feel-good movie, but it's also fucking vicious and grotesque. And to keep bouncing between those two things is an insane blend that also challenges. I mean, it feels so bold because infamously, people who like pet movies do not like to see pets harmed.
Right.
You know, that's a line for a lot of people. Will not see a movie where a pet is harmed. And then on the other side, the grisly violence people don't give a fuck about that.
Right.
Planet Terror runs over dogs. Homeward Bound, no animals hurt in the making of this film. And by blending the parts of each of those things that the other audience goes, ugh, and putting them together and making this amazing movie, I could also see where you're taking a huge risk. You're going, let's take these right. two components that the opposite audience hates
right.
and we'll put them together in one film and just keep slapping people right. back and forth.
It's like chicken and waffles. You're like, on paper, this makes no goddamn sense.
Stop. You always got to find a way, don't you? Always have to find a way. So, hey, we're not in enough trouble. Let's talk about dogfighting.
Yeah, dogfighting is a thing. It's a thing people do. They fight dogs.
I see that you're not as in uncomfortable territory with this as I am.
Dude,
dog
no.
fighting.
I mean, I don't know if you knew this, but dogfighting is kind of a huge thing here in Texas.
Oh, in Texas. Why does that not surprise me?
It's kind of
me?
A big thing. So, I mean, it's not like everybody's doing it, so I'm okay with it.
Everybody's doing it.
But it's kind of like how I would be uncomfortable necessarily being the first one in the room going, maybe the cops should stop killing innocent civilians. But if everybody in the room has been seeing it happen for a while, I can be right. like, we all know this is fucked up, right? And everyone's like, yeah, no, we all know this is fucked up. This needs to change. That's how I feel about dogfighting. Is I go, so we're all seeing this and we all know this yeah. is fucked.
yeah.
Whereas you're sitting there going, I don't know if I should mention this, but dogfighting is fucked up.
This is the thing about fucked up dogfighting is I'm seeing it now in this movie shot in a way, and the training leading up to it. This is another one of the things about White God that I have just never seen anywhere. And, you know, seeing the training, and it feels just so evil and despicable. But if I pretend it's Rocky, it feels okay. So right. that's the mental exercise I go through when I'm watching it. To see that shot like a boxing match, and to really, you hear about dog fighting and the camera might pan past it in a the closest thing we've ever gotten to dog fighting on this show is that robot movie with Hugh Jackman.
Real Steel. I just rewatched it yes. recently. Still really good. Still a yeah. fun, fantastic movie.
Right. We have to go back, Kate. So being able to see this, being exposed to just a thing that happened, it's exactly what we're talking about here. You know, you're around it. It's not as big of a shock to you.
It feels less taboo and just feels more
yeah,
wrong.
Right.
Yeah. You know, when you see billboards that are like, hey, quit doing meth. And I'm like, can we talk about meth here? Is that right. okay to just say? Can we just acknowledge everyone's doing meth? But apparently in Oklahoma, the problem is so bad that there are just road signs like, put the fucking meth down and drive. Don't meth and drive.
Our road signs out here say, if you hit someone, you have to stop your car. Don't keep driving.
Yeah.
It's so funny. Yeah, I know what you're right. going through.
Yeah.
I think it's great being exposed to a taboo that we just never get to see. And when it feels terrible or it feels like, oh no, someone might catch me watching this or whatever, you have to remember that by simply showing you something, retweets are not endorsements. That's my my message for film. Is you see a lot of the, I think this is it's a fucking pet movie. You see a lot of this and somebody's going, you know, people are making a lot of cuddly pet films, but how about we really make a fucking hard one that says stuff, you know, that has a greater, deeper, harder point to it. How often does that happen?
Right.
I'd say twice on the show today.
So
with the tribe as
one
well.
One of the things about the tribe, and this is going to get kind of meta, but it doesn't need to be. So we'll just ignore the meta nature and just move right on after I mention it. But do you feel like...
This sounds like a question.
Do you feel like when you're watching the tribe, because I feel this way, the fact that there is no dialogue, the other... I don't want to say other senses because when you're watching film, you have fewer senses than actual life.
Right, right.
But the other film cues that teach you become way more obvious. It feels like, you know, when they say, say if you can't hear, Mm-hmm. Your other senses become heightened.
Sure.
That's how I feel. I feel like the tribe makes me feel that way. I feel like the tribe is this amazing exercise where it goes, hey, hearing people, this is what it's like to be deaf. This is what it's like to be in a world where everybody can communicate and you can't, and you have to figure out what's going on because nobody's communicating with you.
Well, in that same way, it also puts a spotlight on the sound designer. So I feel like it kind of does both of those. It goes, sound designer, don't fuck this up.
Right.
As the last movie did too.
Right.
It's another thing that draws in so much engagement for me that I feel like, I don't know that I would narrow it by senses, but I definitely, I mean, I just watch these movies more actively than I have watched films in so long.
Right.
As time has gone on, the number one thing that I've really come around on movie theaters, I used to just, no difference. You have a home theater, watch it at home. Who cares? But maybe as society has progressed or I've just become aware of it, sitting in a theater, all you're doing is watching that movie. Mm-hmm. All you're, maybe you're like eating Reese's Pieces or something.
Right.
But you are right there and you're not leaving it. And there's just no distraction, no interruption. And the tribe, maybe even more so than the last movie, because there's literally nothing else to claim. There's not a fucking word in the whole thing. There's barely sounds, barely audible human sounds in the thing. And man, when there are, they are rough. These are bad cat movies for sure. I probably should have warned people up at the top about that. That is doublefeature.fm/bad cat. Get a nice palate cleanser. Sure.
You can also, if you're tired of bad cat, don't forget to rewatch Fiddler on the Roof. That would be
Excellent. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's just a message for people who've already seen it, apparently.
Right. Rewatch it. Rewatch that shitter.
So I have this level of engagement that feels like all the senses, all the film senses are drawing me in. I'm attached to this in a way that I can't even try in films that I'm the most excited of anything for. I can't be as present as the tribe. And the results of that, I mean, I think, I don't know if people watch this had that same experience, but man, did I notice what that does.
Right.
You know, and I think it's part of what elicited the vomit, perhaps, in the last film. But when stuff is curious, fun, great, intriguing, it hits that on it. It's a 10 of 10. And when stuff is fucking hard, you know, you don't have to pull a lot of the strings that you normally do. The violence doesn't have to be more violent than ever. It doesn't have to be more graphic than ever. Specifically, the doctor scene in this, right? I mean, it is so, first of all, it's very lo-fi. Mm-hmm. And secondly, it's in wide, like everything in this movie is. There is not a fucking close-up in the whole goddamn film.
Yeah, you can't identify people by looking at their faces. That doesn't help at all. Between the fact that all their heads are shaved and they wear the same clothing.
I wondered a lot about this. It was like, you know, if you have an over-the-shoulder shot, I think it would just feel funny.
Yeah.
I just think it would, I mean, you know, you can think all day about the detachment level and if you need it for the sign language and blah, 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 but I just think it might be goofy if you're right up in the sign language.
I feel like part of it is to make you feel like an outsider. That's what I think.
Sure, sure.
I think that you're always far away or far behind because you're supposed to feel like you're not included and you don't get a say and there's nothing you can do to stop what's going to happen. You're just fucked and you have to watch it happen.
Well, when those legs are tied up and all the little scrapey, clingy sounds.
Right,
and
which they don't hear. Don't forget they can't hear that stuff.
I know.
So you're more bothered than they are by the sounds.
Maybe.
I mean, not the feeling of, you know, the abortion, but the rest, you have a problem, okay?
Yeah,
the abortion is...
Well, you can tell kind of looking at that doctor, the things that she reacts to and doesn't react to. Doctor / I don't know, veterinarian or whatever, real job.
The lady with the tools, right?
With tools.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't react to the obvious whimpers, to the sound cues, to things of that nature. And when the whole thing is done, you could tell she just feels the entire impact of the whole event all at once and just wants to get out and get away from it. And as an audience, it's drug out for us in a way that we could only get by actually feeling the pain. Otherwise, for for a movie to set out to go, okay, I want every second of this to feel really fucking difficult as the character feels, mm-hmm. as much, oh God, I don't want to do this. I have to. Oh, not that tool. That's the worst. No, that tool is definitely worse. And just the sort of pain, humiliation, sobbing, more pain, seriously bad pain. What's happening to me? I can't believe I'm here right now. That's a sort of irreversible moment. Mm-hmm. You're sitting there the whole time and it's really happening and you're really affected by it. And, you know, that goes back to the I don't know what you want to call it, sense heightening thing or just...
Sure.
For me, it's the sort of tendrils of the film are just wrapped a lot tighter, I guess. So how is that for pivoting right away from your conversation?
No, that's
just
fine.
A really quick, like just I drop said, in there, just say one
have,
thing about it. Get the fuck out of here.
Didn't have much to say, yeah.
Yeah, right. So I also wanted to tell you that on that topic, I did watch this with subtitles just to give you the finger. Because every time you talk to me about this film...
The movie says it doesn't have subtitles.
Well, it lies, because let me tell you, there's brackets, metal clanging, and brackets, footsteps.
That's hilarious.
There's probably about 15 subtitles in the whole thing.
Is there one that says cute dog?
No, there's none that says cute dog. There was really nothing in the subtitles that was of any value.
That's right.
In the slightest.
Do you imagine watching this movie as a person?
That was exactly what I was going to ask you.
Do you think that the movie is more, less, or the same amount of engaging? Not forgetting the fact that you never really can see their hands. It's not filmed in a way where the sign language dialogue is visible necessarily.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I remember at one point, and I don't know, you know, it's been a while, but you knew sign language fairly well.
Right.
I mean, you had taken a lot were at least able to do it enough to impress a person who doesn't know
right.
it.
Right.
So, you used to go to parties and wave your hands around and pretend you learned sign language. Mm-hmm. Yeah, those
definitely
occasions.
Done that. Yeah.
Well, turns out I was totally fooled by that. No, I mean... I did wonder that watching it, if I was thinking in my head, Michael's watching this, he knows some sign language.
Keep in mind that it may be a different story if this were an American film, but different countries have different language.
Oh, that's right.
So
that they have all
Ukrainian sign language is not language. The same sign yeah. language as ASL, American Sign Language, which is what sure. I took all the courses in. So, I mean, essentially it's for, I'm able to watch the movie and understand it the same way you could watch a Ukrainian film without subtitles.
Sure.
It does nothing.
So it's not the same as how all Latin languages
right.
are based.
No.
Like everything starts with a fist
yeah.
and then
I
stuff
mean,
flies
it's the
out
same,
of it. Or...
The same thing. The only difference between, and it's only a minor difference, is that facial expressions are far more integrated into sign language than they are spoken yeah. language. I mean, they still are, obviously. If anybody could actually see the conversation you and I were having right now, they might understand how often we're just being sarcastic or how rarely we wear shirts. But
I'm in LA and it's hot now. I don't wear pants for the show. I don't know if I've ever told you
why
that.
Why should you?
Because people can't see, they can't see the ASL that's going on right now.
Exactly. Right.
Yeah. I mean, I often think about that mixing our show. I go, this sounds weird. Oh, right. Cause I'd swung my arm at that point. So it kind of makes sense
right.
what I'm fucking saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, for other people, they just go, this show's weird. Yeah. Why do they talk like that?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. I mean, just contemplating the exercise, that's enough for me. Honestly, that is, you know, I'd like to know the results, but just in my head wondering, okay, so what would this be like? Say I did have subtitles, what the characters were saying. Mm-hmm. And would I mean, it's a little bit, I suppose, like a more intense version of watching, you know, REC with English subtitles versus knowing Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
And actually
right.
knowing sort of the if there's a pun, you might not
sure.
get it in the subtitles
right.
or whatever. I think, you know, you could follow which bald person is which a little bit more, maybe. But I don't know that's the big overall thing that I keep trying not to talk about. But you use context clues. You follow the story
sure.
just as well, if not better. That's what these movies keep telling us
yeah,
over and over.
I mean, that's the thing is, I feel like if you had subtitles, the broad strokes, again, to go back to the theme we came up with moments after hitting record, the fact that the film is laden with subtlety, I feel like subtitles would take away from the broad strokes of the thematic elements. And it would also probably, to a certain degree, deconstruct the tableaus too much.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like if the conversation leading up to the abortion scene were, okay, so we're going to get that abortion. Oh, okay, cool. Yeah. Let's go get the abortion. Yeah, just keep in mind, she doesn't really know what she's doing. We're sitting there bracing ourselves. The scene would happen and we'd go, oh, yep, there's that abortion they were talking about.
The rape, stop raping me.
Right.
The rape, ow. You know, just doesn't, seeing the words does it. This is something that as a film layman, a lot of people go, subtitles, I have to read, I don't like it.
Yeah.
And then as you get a little more artsy, you go, fuck you, subtitled films are great. And then when you are artsy for 9 years, you go, fuck you, there's so much going on in the movie and I have to read the whole time.
I hate that shit. I'm so glad that you mentioned that. Oh,
this is such
a testament.
We're
going to get that next week too, I promise. It's going to suck.
Huge testament to the parts of filmmaking that make it a better medium for telling stories than other mediums, or at least a very different one. You have audiovisual. You don't have that in a book. You don't have that when someone's sitting at a party. Obviously, all these different mediums have their own, you know, you want to talk about reading, you're taking away all the senses. You're the most engaged, because if you stop being engaged, guess what? The story stops going in your head.
Right.
If you just stop reading, then the story's on pause. So these mediums all have their own advantages and disadvantages. But a lot of people forget, hey, films are here because we can look at them and hear them. And what about those elements? Instead of, I found these characters compelling and the third act didn't really, the dialogue is
right.
Blah,
I mean,
blah, blah.
Can you, again, to go back to the better, worse, or the same, how good are these actors? You don't fucking know. You really don't. They could be amazing because they're conveying things without speaking. But at the same time, maybe they're doing a shitty job and you're picking up on the wrong signals. Maybe
actors,
it's wide
I
enough
thought
that
these
they don't
just,
need to be good actors.
Right. Could be. Yeah. I mean, these are testaments to the power of audio and of video. And if we had the subtitles or if we had the language, I mean, I guess you can actually perform this in reverse a little bit. Watch a foreign film and don't read turn the subtitles off.
Oh man.
And
watch it for the second
every
time.
Film
rewatch
could be the
that shit. Rewatch yeah. that shit.
Right.
It's difficult
to learn the roof.
You
but
have
watch
to watch
a dubbed
it.
Version.
You have to
language.
Watch it twice because I just don't want to go on record as telling people, hey, just pick some fucking foreign film and don't read the subtitles. Don't play this game for the next 2 weeks on Double Feature, please. Don't. The next upcoming 2 weeks, there are films with subtitles. Please leave the subtitles on, please.
Instead of doing the show, we could just read people transcripts.
Right. Watch it. You may, maybe you want to watch one without it and then rewatch it and see how good you did. You know, check the back of the fucking book or some shit.
Right. Right. That talk about engaging too. I mean, just reading a script that's all dialogue, it's so much different than seeing the fucking movie. There's
what
a reason for that.
What do you think the script looked like for this?
Oh man, I have no idea.
And
you
then,
know, it's probably.
And then?
Well, it's weird with scripts because people like to pretend there's a lot of really rigid rules. And they're somewhere, but I've never seen a fucking script that followed any set of rules. In fact, some of the best movies have some of the most terrible back of a napkin scripts. And when I did Disposition, I tried to really adhere to what should a script look like. And as more and more people got their hands on it, I realized, okay, this is just a tome of information. This is my best chance to put in other people's heads what I'm seeing. And I remember there's a scene where one of the characters is like, they're hit by like this wave of just overwhelming depression. And I went through and just wrote a fucking paragraph of just these crippling thoughts about, you know, turning into dust and just no one remembering you. Just these like awful, awful things just to try and give this idea of the way it's whatever gets the job done, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea. I'd love to see the script for this movie.
Yeah.
That,
if it had
be
one.
Incredible.
I mean,
Sure.
I know that they
don't. I have no idea how you make a film like this.
It's insane.
These films are doing things that other films just.
Right. No, you know. I mean, so what was it? It was last week. And man, we're really hitting on this pretty heavily, but with Head, and also when we did film, like, remember when we talked about Houseu and I said,
yes,
it's one of those movies where you watch it and every movie you've ever seen that you thought was crazy, you realize that the bar, you know, you were within the normal frequency of crazy. And then Houseu reminds you that you've not even fucking breached crazy yet. Yeah.
Right.
That's what,
that you need a different word than movie
right,
to describe what you're saying.
That, there's a little bit of that with both of these movies, but The Tribe especially, it defies so many rules.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many rules broken that it, believe it or not, Eric, and I'm gonna reach deep for this one, it may not even fulfill the Fargo checklist.
Oh, you're reaching deep for that. Once upon a time, Michael outlined what a film needs to have as all the things that are in the movie Fargo.
Right.
You know, story, some characters, credits. That's year one when we were trying to figure out what is the thing people called movies.
Right,
I don't know. Let's look at.
Right.
Let's say, hey, have you ever seen Fargo? Yeah. What was that?
When we were some cocky young children who were like, "Fuck the Coen brother. Who the fuck are these guys?" And now I'm much older and much more mature. I apologize. I understand.
To the Coens.
No, to anybody who's been there then and is here now.
You didn't know you would be the first podcast on Apple Music that would be preserved there for all time for people to hear the. First year
in 100 years, in 100 years after the great nuclear holocaust, when people crawl out from their little caves with their six arms and they find us on iTunes, they're going to be like, man, the Coens must have sucked. And then they're going to go, they must have come around in those 8 years. That's what they're going to say.
Or the Coens just got much better over
the, that's what I mean.
Feature. So, you know, there's the part of this that feels like, okay, no film's ever done this. And that's true. And, you know, credit should really be given for this.
Let's be more specific. We've never seen a film that's done this.
Yeah, definitely. But also, and I mean, even to get to a more honest literal truth, is that every film does this. We just don't pay as much attention to these parts. We pay attention to what this film really does is doesn't do one of the things that other films do.
That's true.
And in
but
doing that.
But that's in the checklist. That thing is part of the rules.
Yeah, I know.
You know.
So we get to see these other pieces that, again, I'm left wondering, is this film doing it better than it's ever fucking been done? Or am I just more, more trapped in it? The way it reveals.
Is it shock
scenes,
and awe? Are you just. You sucked up in a flash.
You know, getting used to who these characters are and that kind of slow reveal of the truck scene is my favorite fucking thing. And not the truck running over the kid, which is also this sudden moment of awakening where I go, oh yeah, there's problems that I don't have, like getting backed over, like stupid ways you could die that just people didn't think.
Right.
What if there's a deaf kid over here?
Rest in peace, Anton Yelchin.
Too soon. Hashtag too soon. sorry. That I was not prepared for in the slightest.
You should have just written that in your paragraph and disposition.
Yeah.
Overwhelmed with the thought of Anton Yelchin's death. But that was in fact too soon because you had written that before.
It's true. It's
that
true.
Was too soon. That one
I would
was
have
too
needed
soon.
To use a different hashtag.
Yeah. Actually too soon. Hashtag actually too soon when the joke is before the punchline happens. Like if you were to say something, like if I were to say something like, you know, you're at a party and somebody like trips over and falls and be like, oh man, you just fell down the way Mel Brooks died. And people go, what? That doesn't make sense. And then you just go too soon. Trust me, you'll get it. You'll get it in a couple months.
These are good ideas and you should write them down. I think they're weird and I'd like to use them in something. The reveal of that truck scene with the characters where you're figuring out who the girls are and they're kind of, oh, they're escaping from school. And sometimes these kids are kind of bad, but we don't know how bad yet. And, oh, they're kind of wearing their preparatory boarding outfits. And then they sneak into these slutty mini skirts because they're going to go out to a club. Oh, the club is one of those party monster clubs in the back of trucks. Oh, they're not going to a club, are they? I actually thought, so they're putting on all this makeup and stuff, and then the whole time they just have, you know, they're very we're introduced to these characters, one's topless. I mean, they obviously have no problem seeing each other naked. They're very comfortable getting ready next to each other. And we go through that whole truck scene and then find out that a dude was sitting there the whole time.
Right.
And go, oh, so that there was this lack of humility that was just, and the camera keeps panning and there's like this old guy sitting in the front of the truck and going, okay, well, I guess there's just absolutely enough. That's kind of a weird, oh, they're prostitutes. Oh, that's what's going on here. And it really just changes the perspective a lot, I think, to a lot of the movie says something about your assumed understanding of events, how things transpire, what's in different characters' heads. And it's just so, the movie's so, again, maybe this is an obvious thing, but it's so fucking eye-opening just to concentrate on these sex scenes that are just the sounds of sex. You right. have never more in your entire life, including when you're having sex in complete fucking silence, heard the sounds of sex more deliberately than this scene that is just, you know, fat slapping suction sounds. I mean, every single moment in the whole film seems more, I don't know, more heightened, more deliberate. Maybe it gets back to your senses thing again. I don't know.
I don't
send
know
us
either.
An email, send us a tweet about mm-hmm. it. Also send us I want to know what order you watched these in. I'm not sure this was the best order. I'm not sure any order is the best order. And sorry about the gut punch. It's double feature show at iCloud.com. My Twitter is at _ERICX13.
Mine is
your Twitter is.
Yeah, that's at Pling Michael, P-L-I-N-G Michael. If you can't spell my name, bing it.
Yeah, do Bing it. Bing did it, you please. See, I'll have to send you the chart. We get so many more hits from Bing. I don't know if Bing mm-hmm. knows that we're constantly making jabs at their service or what, that it's become a long-running in-joke. But people on Bing love Double Feature. Yeah. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Must be all those Zunes that are still running out there. What are we doing next time on the show?
Afterlife, 1998. Get the right one.
Not the naked Christina Ricci one.
Not the more
one.
Contemporary one. It's the 1998, the foreign one with the words called.
Although I would say neither of these films have appropriate titles. You have no clue what these films are about.
That's probably true. Yeah, that's probably true.
You just have no fucking clue what you're about to watch.
Like it's like when you go online and you find that Christopher Lloyd sex tape. You know what I'm talking about?
No, what?
Oh, too soon. Sorry.
Hashtag actual too soon. Bye bye bye. Christopher Lloyd sex tape. How about hashtag too late? Ouch. Ouch. I'm sorry. Inappropriate.
And that's all there is. The two are alive and it looks like they're making another tape in there right now. I'm going to One of us is going to look into this, so we'll have more information for you in just a few days. A piece of something taped on here. Afterlife and the Lobsters? 2015? There's also some names on here. Jeremy Mummenthaler? Athena Banks? Tom Comey? Joe Moriarty? Liam Duffy? Chris Peterson? Eric Tachik? Charles Crawford? In the meantime, this has been Jimmy Sin's Suicide. You can find me at suicidegirls.com. I promise we'll come back. Stay strong and watch more fucking film.
This program is a proud member of the battleship Pretension Fleet.